Yes, we have a total of like 1 minute for questions. Yes, Gary.
I'd like to know if any of you know whether or not the magnetophones that Jack Mullen brought back had AC bias or DC bias.
Oh, definitely AC.
They did have AC.
Once he brought, had AC.
Okay.
And that made a big difference, of course.
Yes, because some of the very late Furtwängler broadcasts from the wartime, like the Eroica from Vienna, 1945, they sound like early 50s high fidelity. They're phenomenal. They couldn't have been DC bias.
No, they were AC, and there were stereo recordings from the stereo.
Yes, right. Some of them have been issued on CD.
Yeah.
Yes, go
ahead. Yeah, a question for Henry. All of the research that I've looked into on Silicon Valley, once you pull the thread far enough back, it all goes back to Fred Terman. Did Terman have any influence or support to Ampex?
On the board of directors.
Okay.
He was a director.
All right. And so he was, there was a Stanford connection to Ampex.
Oh, and he was my teacher.
that's all it took.
Yeah, I just want to point back to the one slide about this community of technical scholars. That's very much was the case, that there was a real community of people. There were all of these, you know, Fisher and all these other companies that had been around for a while. Terman knew everybody. He was connected to everybody. He was on the board of many companies, you know, several of the ones I mentioned, Varian, HP, and so on. So, he was connected in that way.
Okay, Seth.
When was the first Ampex machine delivered to RCA in New York? I heard stories as early as April 1948.
I have no idea.
I didn't hear the question.
When was the first Ampex machine delivered to RCA in New York?
I don't recall.
The early surviving of Epiphany.
Are you speaking the audio recorder?
Yeah, the audio.
The audio recorder, the one they copied.
They called the Tinker Toys, the machine
right.
They used to make. Right?
Yeah, and that well, it had to be one of our earlier ones, which went out in 49. So they had me after we had the 300. And then the interesting thing about it, when they copied it, they even copied some of the imperfections in the, which was very interesting.
From what I understand, Jack Mullen told me that when they delivered the machine over to RCA, they made a recording, they flipped it to the playback head. And as they were listening, and they said it sounded terrific. Then they would decide to bring some executives in, they wound the tape back. They played and all they heard was whoop, 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 because the capstan motor hadn't been grounded. It had erased the tape when it had wound it back. And I heard another story that they had a machine there by April of 48, and the second Tuscany telecast was being recorded on tape. I knew one of the guys who was there, and he said they had inadvertently picked up the tape and forgot to pick up the bottom flange and the tape went all over the place. There was nothing surviving of it except on lacquer discs.
Yeah, well, you saw that in one of the slides that he had was at Capitol where the tape was handled.
John Corbett told me that sometimes when the tape would fly up, he used to call it a bird's nest.
Yeah.
When it flew off the machine.
Well, the tape recorders, the magnetophones, were built to use, I guess it was called BASF tape, the German tape, which was slit well enough that you can fast wind it.
Right.
The American tapes were never slit well enough to fast wind it. They would do this when they go fast.
Yeah, that was a lot of stock from about 1949, I know, Seth. I didn't even slit it. And you put it up on the mechanism and you'd watch the tension arms just do a wobble.
Yeah. Okay, Dennis.
I just wondered if any of you could tell me, the real retainer that we all know and love from Ampex tape recorders, was that an Ampex design, the clamp on and then the lift the lever to pull it off?
I've never heard anything else.
The hold down on?
The hold down.
That was designed by Harold Lindsay and Patton.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Very quick question. I know, looking at the pictures of the 200A, it looked as if the heads were on the other side. Did it use tape wound with the oxide on the other side?
Yes.
Oxide out?
The 200A oxide out, the 201. And the 300s and all machines later,
great.
Oxide in.
Yeah, the 200A had a great big head assembly and a knob outside to crank it open and shut, and it was a B-wind machine. And when they went over to the 201 and the 300 and all the rest of them, they changed it over to A1.
Jim.
What was the reason for the 30 inch being the first tape speed for the Ampex machines?
I'm sorry, say again?
For the first Ampex machine, 30 inch being the tape speed, there's a reason why it's 30 inch, not 15 or like 40.
Correct. The RR tape was not sufficiently good that you could drop the speed to 15 and have decent signal to noise ratio. And so they, and we couldn't really do 15 until we got their 111A tape. With 111A, we could go to 15 with no trouble.
I would expect part of it also is the magnetophone was 30 and it was a known technology, and going to half speed was yet another complication that they didn't want to introduce with the very first production.
Dennis.
Gentlemen, I just want to say for all of us that it's been a privilege to have you among us.
Well, I think we have to prepare for the next session, and with that wonderful ovation, perhaps they might want to do an encore out in the lobby.